of all, are there any questions about homework three? Homework three is, I guess, due on Thursday, am I correct? So any questions about homework three? Okay. One thing that I hope is clear to everybody is that I've gotten on the programming part, the little programming assignment. You should know that connected components is not the same as just walking through the edges of the adjacency list. You need to identify what are the pieces of the graph, and for every vertex, which piece is it in. That should be clear from your output. Any questions about that? Yes?
So should the pieces all be like on one line and the root or something?
You could have, I mean, there's different, you could list the for every piece, what are the vertices in it. You could say for every vertex, what piece is it in? Those are equivalent representations as far as I'm concerned. But recognize you're trying to find the number of chunks in the graph. Any questions? Yes?
For that small programming assignment,
there's no time complexity requirement. The main requirement is that it finish before you print the answers. Okay? But on the other hand, if your thing is not running in linear time, you're doing something wrong. That's, I guess, the important point. So you should be doing it with depth-first search or breadth-first search, and you should be doing it in linear time. If you're doing some kind of magic that is seemingly more complicated, that would be that's a bad thing. Any questions? Okay, yes. How's it going to be graded? It's going to be graded like everything else. You're going to slap it up there, and some students are going to grade it. Okay? Again, any questions? And again, we're not looking for style. We're looking for the fact that you know what depth-first search is and that you know how to do these kind of connectivity tests. Yes? You do not need to compile their code, okay? If anybody wants to really fake you out and say that they have, they're giving you an imitation connected components program, okay? If you do, you know... That's their problem. This should not be. How many people have got that program working? How many people found that hard? Okay, so it's not that hard. How many people found it relatively straightforward? That is supposed to be extremely straightforward, just a depth-first search or a breadth-first search. So if you can't make it work, it is worth the time to figure out how to make it work. Okay, any questions? Okay, any other questions about the homework? Okay, the other announcement just I wanted to make was that I have posted on my door the sign-up sheet for the what I promised you, two pizza with the profs. The second one will be a week from Wednesday, so that's November 2nd at noon. I posted the sign-up sheet on my office. There's room for 15 names, and if you're interested, I encourage you to sign up. Any questions about that? Okay, good. Okay, so what I'd like to do today is to finish up graph algorithms, and in particular, finish up shortest paths. We had been talking about shortest paths a little bit last class. We talked about why you want to compute shortest paths. I think that's, for the most part, should be clear to you. It should be clear to you that if we're talking about shortest paths in a weighted graph, breadth-first search is no longer the magic answer, that we can have short paths that end up using a lot of different edges and turns in the graph, right? The breadth-first search is going to give us the path between two vertices with the minimum number of hops. If we have weights on the edges, then we can have a case where a small number of hops can have a large distance, okay? You know, it's presumably, you know, you can get on Highway 1 and drive from, as far as I can tell, somewhere around Maine down to Florida, okay? So you can imagine directions of the form, turn right onto Highway 1, drive 2,000 miles, and then, get off at this exit, okay? That would be a long path, okay, even though it's a small number of edges. Any questions? Okay, good. Okay, there's one other caveat that I want to make clear about edge weights. Before what we're going to assume about edge weights before we get into the how you actually find shortest paths in weighted graphs. And this has to do with negative cost edges, okay? recognize that if you have negative weight edges, okay, cycles in a graph, okay, shortest pass between 2 points becomes meaningless. Let's let the cost, think about it this way. You may say, what do I mean by a negative cost edge? How can you have that in a graph, okay? Let's imagine that we have an edge-weighted graph, a road network, where you want to find the cheapest cost in terms of the fewest number of dollars you need to drive between S and T. Has everybody kind of got that? You know, you can imagine the weight of an edge as being proportional to the amount of gas that it would take to drive on it, right? Or the tolls. Now, suppose, let's say, along the way, there was an ATM machine that was broken. And whenever you went through it, it gave you money. Okay? So you push the button, out comes $500. Okay? What would be the cost of this edge to travel on? Okay? What would the cost of the edge be if it spit out $500 each time you went by? Minus 500. Does everybody see that? Now, assuming that is true, what is the shortest path from S to T? Okay? The shortest path from S to T involves never getting to T. Does everybody kind of see this? You would go through the ATM machine and go around the block and get another 500. Does everybody see that? And keep doing this forever. Does everybody see that? So it should be clear that if we have a negative cost edge in a graph, a negative cost cycle in a graph, what the shortest path is between two nodes is an ill-defined thing. Okay? How can we ensure that there is never a negative cycle in the graph? Okay, yeah? So you're saying, could we make this negative cost edge zero by adding 500 to every edge in the graph? Okay? We could certainly add $500 to every edge in the graph, but is that going to change the shortest path length? Is that our daily problem of the day? Okay? Maybe we'll do the daily problem now, because that's actually just came up here. Okay. What? Okay. The crux of this is, what was the crux of the daily problem? Notice that if we add a fixed amount to the edges in a shortest path in a graph, what was the shortest path is not necessarily the shortest path anymore. Suppose, let's say, I have two routes from S to T. Well, okay, make another S to T. Let's say there is an edge here that is of length 700, and an edge from here to here that is 300, and an edge from here to here that is 300. Okay, and somewhere else in the world I've got a minus 500 edge or something like that hanging out here. If I add 500, what is the shortest path from S to T in this graph? Does everybody see bunk at 600? Right? If I add a weight to every edge in the graph, it's not necessarily going to be true. If I add 500 to each edge, does everybody see this is going to be 1250? Does everybody see that now this path costs 1600? Okay? And thus we can't add a fixed amount to every edge in the graph and hope to keep the paths the same. Yeah.
But in the daily problem, it's a minimum standing tree, which has the exact number of edges.
Okay, we'll talk about the daily problem a little bit more later, okay, when I get up to it over there. But did everybody see that the proposed solution of avoiding these negative cost edges by jacking up the weight of everybody else doesn't do it? Because it'll cause us to favor shorter paths. Does everybody see that? Shorter in the number of hops, okay, and that long, those shortcuts that involve all these jigs and jags suddenly are no longer desirable. Any questions? Yes.
Isn't it true in non-negative graph that the shortest path can't possibly involve a cycle?
Okay, so it is true that if the edges are all positively weighted, it shouldn't involve a cycle. Does everybody kind of see that? Because you could always, if you're going around, if it costs you real money to go in that cycle, or real time or distance, you're best off shortcutting that cycle and deleting the cycle. So you're right that in the shortest path, in a graph which doesn't have these weird negative cycles, okay, then the, what you call it, then the, you know, then it won't have any cycles. Any questions? Okay. Yes.
Can we not constrain the problem then to say that if you took a cycle, it's sort of an invalid shortest path in a way, or is it?
Okay, well, I guess what I would say here is the following, that the way that we're usually going to deal with this is to assume that that edge weights are positive. If we say that the algorithm we're going to look at, Dijkstra's algorithm, okay, works for will work for all edges, graphs where the edge weights are positive, okay, and negative cost edges are kind of a borderline thing. How many people believe that in a shortest path combination would ever see a negative cost thing? You would have said, hey, these are kind of flaky edges, right? So it shouldn't really limit you too much. I will tell you the Floyd's algorithm that we're going to talk about at the end of the day does something sort of sensible with negative edges, okay? But negative cost cycles are still a weird thing. Any questions? Okay? So for now, just to simplify the world, we're going to assume that all edge weights are positives. Okay? Any questions? Okay, good. So what is the idea of Dijkstra's algorithm, which is the classic algorithm for finding shortest paths? And it's basically saying this. If the shortest path from S to T goes through X, what do we know about the path from S to X? Okay? It's got to be the shortest possible path from S to X, or else there could be a shorter way to get to T. Does everybody agree with that? So what we are going to be interested in doing in Dijkstra's algorithm is figuring out the shortest path to every vertex in the graph. This is where the shortest path spanning tree is going to come from. Okay? But it's going to be because we want to be able to, what we're going to do is, okay, store basically the cost of getting to every vertex, okay, the shortest path to get to every vertex, okay, and we are going to, you know, do it by kind of storing the costs of getting there. So the word dynamic program is going to start to be a specter in this class, okay? And dynamic programming is an idea we will see more of in a few weeks, okay? But basically it's about algorithms that are based on storing values, okay, so we can look them up when we need them. Any questions? Okay. So what is the idea of Dijkstra's algorithm? Dijkstra's algorithm is going to start saying, we want to say, we know that based on that observation, we know that the shortest path from S to X is going to be, from S to T, is going to go through some other vertices. We need to know the shortest path to each of these vertices on the chain. So one by one, we're going to go through an iteration where we're going to establish the shortest path from S to a new vertex. Okay? Now, what is the shortest path in the graph from S to S? Okay, how long is the shortest path from a vertex to itself? Zero, if we don't have any of these negative cycles, right? Negative cycles would make this a bad thing, right? But we're going to assume that the cost of getting from S to S is zero. Is there any other, if we wanted to figure out now, if we start on S, here is our graph S, we're going to start from here. We know the cost of getting from S to S is zero. What other vertex do we know the shortest path from S to? Okay, anybody? Yeah?
If we look at all the edges, and the shortest one will have to be kept.
The shortest neighbor, if we look at all the outgoing edges from S, one of them is going to be of minimum weight. Let's say 5, 7, 9, 14, 6. One edge out here from S is going to be the minimum weight of the edge there. I claim that this is going to have to be, if this is going to some vertex X, the shortest edge has to define the shortest path from S to X. Why is that? Okay, yeah. If there's no negative edges, you can't find the shorter edge. Does everybody see that if we had the broken vending machine here that had an edge of minus 500, suddenly there would be a cheaper way to get there through a rich edge, right, a big edge, right? But the claim is that by following the nearest, the cheapest edge from S, we will know the shortest path to X. Now, what is the next closest vertex? We now know the shortest path from S to S, to know the shortest path from S to X. What is another vertex? Where is the next vertex that we know the shortest path to? Yes?
So if X connects to whatever the sixth edge connects to with a cost of less than the sixth edge, then it would be that.
Okay, what you're saying is that the following... The candidate places that we can go to and know the shortest path of, either it's going to be a direct edge from S, or it's going to be an edge coming from X. Does everybody see that? And some of these, by the way, might go back to other vertices. Does everybody see that? What if the cost of this particular edge was 3? You'll notice we discovered a shorter way to get to that vertex, right, than 9, right? But what are we going to want to do? We're going to want to find which is the next vertex to claim. And that's going to be, which one is it? If there was an edge here of weight 2, is that going to be the best edge to follow next?
Maybe not, because you have a 6 edge from S.
Okay, the answer is no. Because this gives us a way to find a vertex at a cost of what? This would be the cost of getting to X, which was 5, plus 2, right? So this edge gives us a way to get here at a cost of 7. But there might be a cheaper way to get there, right? Here's a way to get to someplace at X, at 6. Maybe there is an edge of weight 1/2 over here. Does everybody kind of see that? So what are we going to do? We're going to keep track of, for every vertex, what is the cheapest way of getting to it. And in each iteration, we are going to go and claim which of the vertices that isn't yet in our tree of discovery, okay? Our tree of adding from shortest paths from. Okay, which is the next one we add? Yeah?
Sort of a breadth-first search?
Is it sort of a breadth-first search? Not necessarily. Okay, I mean, let's say that my graph looked like this. Let's say that there was you could imagine a world where, for some reason, there is a path where everything weighs 1 going down to here, and every other edge in the graph has weighed 1 billion. Does everybody see that kind of thing? Which are the ways we would know the shortest path to? Starting from here, we go to here. It's here, it's here, it's here, it's here. It's not going in that local a thing.
But don't you have to check every edge at every step?
We will have to check the edges coming out of our edges so far. I wouldn't call it a breadth first search. I would call it a best first search. That's what I would call it. Okay? Does everybody kind of see that we're doing? The next vertex we're claiming is the one that we have the closest way of getting there. Okay? So I would call it best first search. Any questions? Okay. So what does Dijkstra's algorithm look like? Okay. It looks like, again, we're going to have originally a vertex S that we know the shortest path to. Okay? Because that's our source. The distance to getting to every other vertex is going to be infinite originally, right? And For every edge out of S, we're going to now say the cost of getting to that vertex is the direct cost of the edge, right? Now, the last vertex that we have processed, we'll say, is S. What are we going to be doing? We are now going to think, what is the next vertex to add? We're going to be selecting the V such that the distance to that vertex is of minimum cost, okay, that isn't yet in the tray. And then for every edge out from that vertex V, we're going to take a look and say, if there is an edge Vx that goes out of that vertex V, the shortest way to get to vertex X is either the previous cheapest way to get to vertex X, or the cost of getting to V plus the cost of the edge from V to X. Does everybody kind of see it? The cheapest way to vertex X is either going to be what was the shortest way to X, or going through vertex V. Any questions? And in each iteration, we're going to claim another vertex as our own. Any questions about that? How many people kind of get the algorithm? Okay. How many people think this algorithm smells like something they have seen before? Okay, yeah, what is it like? Okay. It looks like Prim's. It is amazingly looks like Prim's. Okay, in fact, let me show you how much it looks like Prim's. Okay. Here is, I am taking what was my Prim's algorithm implementation, and I'm going to show in red all the changes you have to make to the code. First, you have to call it Dijkstra's algorithm instead of Prim's. Does everybody agree with that? If not, it's still Prim's. But the only other change in the entire algorithm is, before Prim's said that, well, when we're going through and updating, what is the cheapest way to add a new vertex in? Before, the cost of adding an edge into the minimum a vertex into the minimum spanning tree was the cost of the cheapest edge incident upon it, right? Now, it's the cost of the cheapest path to it, which is the weight of that edge plus the cost of the shortest path to that vertex. Does everybody see that? So what has changed? Okay, I'm warned that this is going to fade out quickly. But what does it say? Basically now, if the distance to vertex W, okay, that we best we currently have now, is greater than the distance to vertex V plus the edge from V to W, then we have found a cheaper way to get to vertex W. Does everybody kind of see that? So this is all that has changed, is the stuff that is red. Otherwise, this is Prim's algorithm. Okay? Any questions about it? So everything we knew before about how fast Prim's algorithm was, okay, and under what we can do with it, still holds. Any questions? Okay? Yes?
So are we storing, what are we storing exactly? Do we store in every, like, adjacency matrix, do we store, like, the path, or do we just store the weight?
So do we store the what do we store to store the path? Notice that Prim's algorithm, okay, there's if you look at this thing, in Prim's algorithm, remember there was this parent pointer, okay, where we kept track of who discovered you? Did I update that? Where did I update? Yeah, parent. See the parent? Okay. That parent thing is what gave us a tree in minimum spanning tree, right? We started from some vertex, and we kept basically growing out until we had included every vertex in our tree. Likewise, we get a tree from Dijkstra's algorithm. When we add a vertex into the tree, a new vertex that we claim to have found the shortest path to, we keep as its parent is the guy that discovered it, that provided that edge. And what is this tree good for? This tree gives you the shortest path from the root to every other vertex. Does everybody kind of see that? You're telling me, wait, how do we know this is a tree? How do we know there are not any cycles in it? Well, there can't be any cycles in it because it's going to get longer. Does everybody agree with that? If there's not any cycles in it, what do we have? A tree. So what's interesting is that there is a shortest path spanning tree that is built by Prim's algorithm, okay, that will describe the shortest path from your source to any other vertex in the graph. Okay? Any questions about that? Yeah?
So at every step, you have to check all the, basically all the paths that lead to a leaf to get a new edge?
So to get a new edge, what I'm going to want to do is, again, what is what it should look like Prim's algorithm. There is a tree that has been built, a partially built tree that has been built so far, right? There is a fringe of vertices that are one edge away from, what you call it, from the vertices that are already in the tree, right? There are other vertices that are further out that we haven't found a way to get to it at all yet. We'll eventually get to them if it's connected. But what do we want to do? For every vertex in this fringe, we want to find what is the cheapest, the one that we know the shortest path through. And what I claim is that the shortest path to this vertex is going to be an edge plus the distance from the shortest path distance to the other endpoint of that vertex back to the root. So what do we want to do? Just like in our fast implementation of Prim's algorithm, like we did there, we're going to keep track of what is the distance to this vertex. The distance to this vertex is the minimum over all edges to it of the cost of getting to the other endpoint plus the weight of that edge. Does everybody see it? We're trying to minimize the sum of getting to the vertex plus the weight of that edge. Whereas with Prim's algorithm, all we minimized was the weight of the edge. Okay? Any questions about that? Do people see this algorithm? Any questions? Yes?
So, the order of complexity is also O n plus m?
The only thing that has changed, let's think what has changed about the complexity. Did renaming it from Dijkstra to Prim's change the complexity? No, that shouldn't have changed it. The only thing that is going to change is the stuff in red, and that is all a constant time operation. Does everybody see that? Okay. It looks things up in arrays, it adds them, it does an if, and it maybe upsets a couple variables, right? So this is going to be n squared for exactly the same reason that Prim's algorithm is n squared. Any questions about that? Okay. Let's look at an example just to see what we're doing and to, again, give me a chance to fall down a little bit. Here was my example. Let's see if we can do this here. Why not? Let's try it here. Okay, here is our graph. Where do we want to start? Let's start on vertex A as our source. Does everybody agree with that? Now, what is the cost of getting to every neighbor of it? This one we can get to at a cost of less than or equal to 5. This one we can get to at a cost of less than or equal to 7. This one we can get to at a cost of less than or equal to 12. Does everybody agree with that? So which is the one that we know the shortest path of? This thing. Does everybody agree? And now this is in fact equal to 5 because we know there can't be a better way to do it. Now we update the consequences of this. We can get to this thing at a cost of 14. Are we impressed? 14 through this vertex. Are we impressed? No, because we can do that from 9. Here we can get to that at the cost of 12. Are we impressed? Yes, that's less than or equal to 12 now, right? Does everybody see that? What is the next edge that we're going to add? We know how to get here in a cost of 7. Does everybody agree with that? Because that's the minimum of the possibilities that are reachable, right? Let's go through and update the things. Here we can get to it at a cost of 7 plus 9. Are we impressed?
No.
7 plus 4, are we impressed? Yes, that now becomes less than or equal to 11. 7 plus 3, are we impressed? Yes, if I can reach that far, I'll be impressed. Does everybody agree with that? That's less than or equal to 10. What about this one? Now this gives me a way of getting there at the cost of 11. Are we impressed? Okay, now which is the vertex that we claim next? What's the cost to it? 10. Does everybody see that? This is now actually 10.
Let's try it.
Okay, good. Okay, now what are the consequences? This gives us a way to get to this vertex at a cost of what? 17. Are we impressed? No. This gives us a way to get there at a cost of what? 12. Are we impressed? Out there, it gives us a way to get to it at a cost of what? 12. Are we impressed? So let's try. This you'll be impressed by. Okay. Okay, good. Let's take a chance at that. This is less than or equal to 12. Does everybody agree with that? And now we've got this guy in R3, this guy in R3, this guy in R3, and this guy in R3. Which is the next vertex that we should claim? Okay, 11. There's two different ways we can get to something at 11. Which one should we take? Doesn't matter. We know the shortest path to it. Which one should we take? Do you want to take the top one? Let's take the top one. Now, this is, in fact, equal to 11, right? And what are the consequences? Can't help us because it's in the tree. Can't help us because it's in the tree. This is going to give us a path of length 16, right? 11 plus 5. It can't help us because we have a way of doing it in 12, right? And now we might as well. There's only one vertex, and the best way to get it was 11. Does everybody see that Dijkstra's algorithm has built this minimum path spanning tree? And that gives us the shortest path from the root to every other vertex in the graph. Any questions about that? Yes?
So if this is an order squared, how does something like Google Maps work?
Okay, so the question is, this is an order n squared algorithm. And the question is, how does Google Maps work? That is actually an excellent question. Because it's obvious that they are not computing the whole road network. They're not computing a Dijkstra's algorithm on the whole road network at once. Okay? So first, as I guess I'll, if you read this slide, and you'll see that there are, in fact, somewhat faster ways to do this with better data structures using queues or so. So if you implement this with queues in the right way, it would be something like m log n, okay? But you're telling me that still doesn't help Google that much. Because to answer, how much are you paying for every one of these Google map queries to find the shortest path from here to your mother-in-law in California? You're paying nothing, right? So there are other tricks that are used by Google Maps to find shortest paths quicker, okay? One trick, for example, is to note that, you can compute shortest paths to landmarks and kind of cache them to make your problem simpler. If you're driving to California, some way or another, you're going to be getting off of Long Island. Does everybody agree? Where can you get off Long Island? Okay, there's millions of roads in Long Island you would have to worry about. But ultimately, you're going to have to take one of the bridges or maybe a ferry. Does everybody agree with that? So there's only about, somehow, you could kind of say that reduce the problem to what is the fastest way to get to each of these entry points to Long Island, okay? And then the problem reduces to what is the fastest way to get from you to an entry point, okay? And then from your mother-in-law, you find where the nearest entry point was on her end. If you have Okay, is this better? Okay, I got the juice again. Okay, good. Okay, any questions? So does everybody kind of see that if you engineer your shortest path appropriately, okay, you have hopes of being able to do better? Let me show you just one thing. One other thing that you could do. One interesting thing about Dijkstra's algorithm is that that it does require to find the shortest path between you and anybody else. It involves going to the end of the graph. Does everybody agree that that's going to be visiting the, you know, in some sense, the whole graph? Or if you think about it on the U.S., another way to think about it. Here's a map of the United States, right? If you think about what, here's Long Island sitting there, right? Okay. What would Dijkstra's algorithm likely look like if you were watching this happen? Remember, it's showing you the shortest path to every other place from stuff like that? Does everybody kind of believe that what's going to kind of happen is you're sort of going to be finding the shortest path to places out like a circle? It's like radiating out from that. Does everybody see that? And you would have to pretty much, to get to your aunt here, okay, you pretty much have to visit everybody. Does everybody kind of see that? Another trick that that the Googles of the world might do, though, is what if they found you wanted to find the shortest path between you and this person in California, whose identity keeps changing? What if we were to instead radiate out a circle from both of you? Does everybody kind of get this idea? We could radiate the circle out from both of us. And the moment that these circles kiss, we have found the shortest path between them. Does everybody kind of see that? And that in this case, again, this may not be as dramatic, but there is chunks of the country that we would not have seen. Does everybody kind of get it? So there are a lot of tricks that would go on to engineering a really high-performance shortest path thing. But at heart of hearts, they are sort of Dijkstra underneath. Yes?
So that example of two circles, that wouldn't necessarily be the shortest path, but it would be, say,
the shortest path. Well, it should be the shortest path, actually. Because let's think about it. You know the shortest path. Well, let's think about it. We know the shortest path from here to this. We know that it's the absolute shortest path from here to there, right? We know the distance to all of these other places. Maybe by continuing our paths a little bit more, we should be able to prove there is no shorter way of doing it. Okay? Let's say that it was 3,000 miles. Let's say it was 2,000 miles here, and let's say 1,500 miles there. Okay, when we met, right? We can stop the moment there is no way to get such that the sum of something on this side plus something on this side is going to be less than that. I think we do have to continue it a little bit more, but the basic material we have is kind of there. Yeah. Does that mean that this can be paralyzed? Well, recognize that we are finding in Dijkstra's algorithm, the interesting thing is we are finding the shortest path from one vertex to all the other vertices, right? If you want to find the shortest path from two different vertices to all the other vertices, obviously those computations can run in parallel. And that's basically what I was doing here, okay? Trying to really parallelize Dijkstra's algorithm would be a tricky thing in a serious way. But there's presumably some levels of... But recognize that considering it for different sources certainly can be done in parallel. Yes?
Is there like a possibility with like maps in particular that they might like take off edges that aren't interstate highways for like long time?
It's possible that they will say that, that for certain routes they're going to cache what the shortest routes are. Okay, that is kind of, I guess, the basic idea. And I think that that there's undoubtedly a lot of caching that's going on. There's all kinds of clever tricks. But at heart of hearts, it's a Dijkstra thing underneath it. Any questions? Okay. Any questions about Dijkstra's algorithm or how it works for shortest paths? Okay. Any questions? Okay. Good. So as I said, it's going to be n squared algorithm, same time, running time, for just same as prims, for the same reason as prims. Okay? And sort of like I alluded to last time, if you use better data structures, like a queue to keep track of where your distances are, okay, you can come up with a faster implementation for sparse graphs, okay, which would certainly be something that you'd worry about if it was a map problem, because the map graph will be sparse. Any questions? Okay, don't really want to go there. Okay, what was the problem of the day? I just want to now finish killing the problem of the day since we got to that point. It asks you, find the for an undirected weighted graph, and T was the shortest path spanning tree rooted at vertex V. Now if we add a constant value to all the edge weights, is that tree still the shortest path spanning tree? The answer is no. Okay, why? It was the argument that I gave earlier. Okay, in fact, here it was, right over here. Starting out from this simple graph with three vertices, S, let's call it A and T. In the original weights, 300, 300, 300, 750, what was the shortest path spanning tree from S? It was this and this. Does everybody see that? So in this case, the shortest path spanning tree was a, what you call it, looked like this. If I jacked up the weights of these things by 500 each, so this was 1,250, this was 800, and this was 800, what would the shortest path spanning tree now look like?
Same thing.
It would not look like the same thing. It would be, okay, the shortest path spanning tree would now look like this. Does everybody see this? Now this would be 1250, this would be 800. Does everybody kind of see that this is now the shortest path spanning tree?
I jacked up both edges, so
it's... I jacked up all the edges here by 500. This was 300 to 800, 300 to 800, 750 to 1250. Does everybody see this? The shortest path spanning tree is describing the shortest path from S to every other vertex.
Oh, okay. It's not the minimal spanning tree.
It is not the minimal spanning tree. This is the important point here. Does everybody see this? That was going to be my next question. Is the shortest path spanning tree the same as the minimum spanning tree? How could that be when they were both selected by something that was almost Prim's algorithm? The magic word is the almost. Does everybody see that? That we were picking edges according to different criteria. In the Prim's algorithm, we were always looking for the cheapest edge to add. In the other one, we were looking for the closest vertex to add. Does everybody kind of get the idea? So in this case, this was the shortest path spanning tree, okay, was in fact going 800, 800, because the, Again, what were the graph? For this, but this was 300, 300, right? The shortest path spanning tree on this graph was this because the shortest way to get to T was through A. When you add the weights to it, the shortest way to get to T is no longer through A, right? The shortest path spanning tree encodes the shortest path from every vertex to every other vertex, okay? Does everybody kind of get that idea? Yes. The shortest path spanning tree is the tree that describes the shortest route from S to every other vertex in the graph. The shortest path, if the graph's weights were 800, 800, and 1250, the shortest way to get to T was through this big edge, right? The shortest way to get to, we had two ways to get to vertex A. We could have made 1250 and 800, but forget about it. There was a direct path of length 800, right? So does everybody see this is important to understanding these things? The shortest path spanning tree is not the same thing as the minimum spanning tree. Any question?
Yeah,
Okay, so another question that might have been the case. Let's ask ourselves the same question as on here about the minimum spanning tree. Suppose I have a graph, and I add edges, weights to all the edges on the graph, the same weight to every edge on the graph. Does the minimum spanning tree change? Who here says no? Who here says yes? Who here has a proof? Okay, what's your proof? Okay, maybe there's an idea there, but I don't. That's not the kind of proof I like. Yes. What about Kruskal's algorithm? What did Kruskal's algorithm do? Remember, it sorted the edges by weight, and then went through and added them until they created cycles. Does everybody agree? So when we add 500 feet to every edge in the graph. Is that going to change their relative order in sorted order? Is it going to cause a cycle where there wasn't one before? The Kruskal's algorithm is going to do exactly what Kruskal's algorithm did before. Does everybody see that? So the minimum spanning tree will not change. Does everybody see that? The shortest path spanning tree might change. Okay, any questions? What about negative edges on minimum spanning tree on minimum spanning trees? If I have graphs with negative edge weights, does that bother a minimum spanning tree problem? Okay, for minimum spanning tree, would negative edge weights bother anybody? No. Okay, and what's a proof of that? Well, basically, it's sort of the idea that we had before about the path algorithm. Now, suppose we do add a constant weight to all the edge weights, right, to bring them, make them all positive. Is that going to change what the minimum Kruskal's algorithm is going to do? It would pick the edges at exactly the same edge weight, okay, and come up with the same tree, okay? The weight would just be the number of edges in the tree, n minus 1 times the weight that we added to it. Any questions about these things? Yes? Kruskal's algorithm can have negative edge weights and it's not a problem. In fact, let me tell you, putting negative edge weights on a graph for minimum spanning tree can be a wonderful thing to do. Okay? What if you wanted to find, can anyone give me an algorithm to find the maximum weight spanning tree of a graph? Let's say someone is paying you, okay, you're a contractor, they say, build me a spanning tree. What spanning, and you're going to get paid per, for every, unit of age in the tree. What are you going to want to do? You want to build them a minimum spanning tree? No, you're going to want to build them the most possible, expensive possible spanning tree. How could we find the most expensive spanning tree in a graph? Yeah? Use Kruskal's and sort the other way, or what if we just multiply all the edges by -1? Now what was a big edge, now what was the most expensive spanning tree is now the least expensive spanning tree. Does everybody kind of get that? And so, in fact, finding maximum spanning trees is the same real problem as finding minimum spanning trees, okay? Which is kind of interesting. Any questions about that? Okay? And again, it's another example of my lesson that a lot of times it's easier to change the graph than to invent a new algorithm. Okay, any questions? Okay, any questions about shortest path spanning trees and minimum spanning trees before I go into something slightly different? Okay, good. Okay. So I'd like to talk about another shortest path algorithm, okay, for a specific kind of problem that is interesting, called Allpair's shortest path. Dijkstra's algorithm, as we saw, gave me the shortest path from one vertex to all the other vertices. Does everybody agree with that? Sometimes what you really want, however, is a matrix of which would show you for every pair of vertices, okay, from one to n, from one to n, what is the length of the cheapest path from I to J? Has anybody ever seen a distance matrix like that before? Where does it appear? Why do you care about distance matrices like that? Okay, has anybody ever seen one? Yeah?
My semester we did in 214, but I think like UPS or somebody might care because they have to do a bunch of...
So it might very well be you see tables that would show, let's say, what's the cost of routing from one place? You say UPS. I imagine UPS probably charges you by how far apart things are, right? And so I can believe that UPS has a table of zones, okay? And they will tell you what's the shipping cost from zone I to zone J, which is a measure of how far apart they are, right?
Well, no, UPS has to do like many packages in the same day, and they have to find like all the shortest paths between the truck.
This is not a property of a particular, I would say this is a, all pair shortest path is a property of the network. Okay, does everybody kind of see this? The input is the entire network. This is going to tell you the shortest path from every vertex to every other vertex. Okay, and it's a table that lets you quickly look up what shortest paths are. So I can guarantee you that Google MapQuest probably has this. If you ask what's the distance between two points, Google probably does not recompute that on demand. They probably look it up in a table, right? Any questions about that? Yes?
So I guess what I'm really trying to ask is this a way to do like an efficient cycle using this?
Is this a way to solve like a traveling salesman cycle?
Well, not close because that's NP, but like just something close to traveling.
Okay, if you want to find a shortest cycle to something, what you would really want to know is, this is a little bit different. Let's say we wanted to find the shortest cycle between me and another place. What would be the shortest cycle there? Go there and back if it's an unweighted, undirected graph, right? If it's a directed graph, maybe I can't quite do that, right? Then it would be the shortest path from here to here plus the shortest path from there to there back. So a two-person cycle is now there. If you now want to find the shortest cycle between visiting all of a bunch of other points, if you don't know what the, or if you know the order in which you want to visit them, then that's just repeated calls to Dijkstra's algorithm, right? Or if you want, looking it up in this table. If you want to optimize over what order you visit these guys, that gets us into traveling salesman department flavor, right? And that's going to be a harder thing. Any questions?
Does this table create like O1 for any call?
Once you have this table in constant time, you can tell the distance between I, the shortest distance between I and J for any pair I and J. That's what the use of this table is. Any questions? Okay. So there are a bunch of reasons why you might want to have this table of distances, one of which, as I said, would be to, so you could look up quickly what the distance is between two things. Suppose I give you a graph. Let's say I have a graph like this. Here is a graph. Does everybody see that graph? If I had to ask you which graph vertex is the centermost vertex in the graph, okay, which vertex would be the centermost vertex? Does everybody agree it's 3? Now, what does it mean to be the centermost vertex? Yeah? Highest degree? Well, do you really think that if we put in another vertex here, and let's say, let's add some other, I could certainly add a couple of other guys here to jack up their degrees. Does everybody agree with that? Now, what do we still think is the centermost vertex in the graph? It's probably not that's the one with the highest degree, is it? How might we define what the center is, yeah?
The one with the lowest total towards every other
one that has the lowest average distance to all the other vertices, right? Or maybe that minimizes the maximum distance to all the other vertices? Let's say you had one place, you were going to open up one, this is an island, and you're going to open up one McDonald's. Where are you going to put that McDonald's? Okay, in the center. Why? Because it minimizes travel time to everybody else, right? How can we figure out which is it? You need to know the distance to between every vertex and every other point, right? And that's exactly what you get when you compute an all-pair shortest path matrix. Does everybody agree with that? So it should be clear that there's connections between this and finding centers. Okay? How can we find the all-pair shortest path? Fill in the all-pair shortest path matrix. So we know the shortest path from every vertex to every other vertex based on what we know so far. How could we do that? If you want to find the shortest path from every vertex to every other vertex, how could we do it? Yes? Just start from every vertex and find from vertex 1, what's the shortest path? I build the shortest path spanning tree. I am going to get the shortest path distance to every vertex from 1. Does everybody agree? If I run it now from 2, I'm going to get the shortest path from 2 to every other vertex, right? Does everybody agree that if I make n calls to Dijkstra's algorithm, I can compute the all-pair shortest path cost matrix here? Any questions? How many people see that? Any questions? How many people don't see it? Any questions? Okay. How much time would it take to fill in this n by n matrix with Dijkstra's algorithm? Yeah? N times n squared. Does everybody agree? So it's n cubed. Okay. Fair enough. Let me show you another n cubed algorithm for it. Okay. That is amazingly slick and is going to introduce us to an idea that will haunt you in a few weeks, okay, of something called Dijkstra's algorithm. Dynamic programming, excuse me, right, that's what will haunt you. Dijkstra's algorithm shouldn't haunt you. If Prim's algorithm didn't haunt you, Dijkstra's algorithm shouldn't. Okay, what is dynamic programming? Dynamic programming is an idea that we will talk about that is basically going to work by defining a recursive way to compute what you want, something, a recursive formula called a recurrence relation. And we're going to evaluate this recurrence in a bottom-up way. Okay? And then we're going to pull out the optimal solution from that. Okay? This doesn't explain anything yet. But start to look for the idea of a recurrence. So how can we compute the all-pair shortest path problem in a recursive manner, okay? And what we're going to first do is to compute, turn the weighted adjacency matrix, the distance matrix of the graph, the edge weights of the graph, into a distance matrix for the graph if we don't go through any intermediate nodes. Suppose I've got a weighted graph. The weight of the distance from I to J is W of IJ. And now we want to say, if we're not allowed to go through any intermediate nodes, what is the cost of getting between any two places? It should be clear that if there is not a direct edge between two vertices, and we're not allowed to go through any intermediate nodes, what's the distance between these two vertices? Okay? If we are not allowed to go through a intermediate node, if I have a graph that looked like this, you know, here was vertex 1, 2, 3. Let's say it was an edge from 1 to 2 of weight 4, 2 to 3 of weight 5. What is the cost of getting from 1 to 3 if we're not allowed to use any intermediate vertices? What is the shortest path from here to here where we can't use anything intermediate? Infinite. There's no way to do it, right? Does everybody see that? So this distance matrix, the first distance matrix I'm going to compute, is what is the distance matrix from the edge weights where we want to now talk about how far apart things are. It should be clear that if there is a direct edge between I and J, if we're not allowed any hops, we can get from I to J in that weight. If vertex I equals vertex J, then there's a way of getting there at cost zero, right? Otherwise, the cost of getting between any two places is infinite. Does everybody see that? You may say, duh, that doesn't look that interesting. What's going to be interesting? Okay? We are going to now define a recursive idea for how to compute the shortest path from I to J. And what we're going to do is do this recursively, and this is a clever thing that's going to lead to an amazingly simple algorithm. Okay? We're going to say dij superscript k is the shortest path from I to J using only vertices 1 through k as possible intermediate vertices. Before, I didn't allow you any intermediate vertices, right? So that was the distance matrix I showed before was dij 0 because there were no intermediate vertices. What if I do allow you an intermediate vertex? I want to claim this formula is going to tell us the shortest path. So let's look at this carefully and read what it says. I'm going to claim the shortest path from I to J. Let's use some more juice that we have in here quickly. The shortest path from I to J going through vertices 1 through K as possible intermediaries is either the cost of going from I to J using vertices 1 through k minus 1 as possible intermediaries. What does that mean? That means the shortest path from I to k did not go through k, right? If we didn't use k, then it didn't get any shorter, right? Or we did go through k. And if we did find that the shortest path from I to j went through k, what is the cost of that path? The cost of going from I to k plus the cost of going from k to j. Does everybody see that? If I allow you a new intermediate vertex k, said you already knew what was the shortest path without k from I to j. If I allow you k as an intermediary, now I claim the shortest path from I to J is either going to go through K or it isn't. This is going to be going through K. This is going to be not going through K. Any questions about that? Look at that formula. How many people see it? How many people don't see it? Any questions from the people who don't see it? Question like, I don't see it is a possibility. Any questions? Okay, let's look at an example of this. Okay, and again, this is maybe a little hard to see, but I want people to try to figure this out because this is an amazing thing. Okay, here we have a simple graph, okay, four vertices, and as you can see what the edge weights are. If we start with the zero matrix, what is the cost of getting between things? To get from vertex I to vertex I, okay, that was the main diagonal there. Does everybody agree with that? And that would be zero. The cost of using nothing as an intermediary edge, those are just the other edge weights are simply the edge weights of the graph. And everything else was, infinite. Does everybody kind of get that? How many people understand where this first matrix comes from? Raise your hand if you understand it. And if you don't understand it, raise your hand, saying, I don't see where that first matrix comes from. Any questions? Now, let's think what we can do if vertex 1 is allowed as an intermediary. I mean, vertex A is allowed as an intermediary. What are the new shortest paths that we're allowed? If we go through A, we're allowed to go from what? We can go from D to, let's take a look at what could we possibly gain by going through vertex A over here? We could go from B to C. Does everybody see that? We could go from D to E. Does everybody see that? And we allow new possibilities. Okay? So what is the shortest path from D to C? If we're allowed A, before there was no way to go from D to C. Now there is at a cost of 9. Does everybody get that? Before there was no way to go between, okay, B and C. But now there is at a cost of 5, right? Does everybody see that? What about the next iteration? Now, assuming I'm allowed to use vertex 2 as an edge, what other possibilities are there that are now revealed? I can now go from C to A at a cost of 9. Does everybody see that? And so that's the one that gets updated here. Nothing else is going to change. Once I now allow you to go through C, what are the new things that are created by going through C? Okay? My claim is that in this case, I am now going to be able to do what by going through C? This is going to give me a new way to go from A and B to D. Does everybody see that? And so I'm going to be updating here, going through C, the cost of getting from A to B. Okay, and okay, according to this, there's 4 distances that I'm now able to update. What is it? There's a cheaper way to get from D to B. Okay, why is there a cheaper way to get from D to B through C? There was a way to get from D to C, and there was a way to get from C to B. Does everybody see that? Because there was a way to get from D to C and a way to get from C to B. Now we have a new way to get there at a cost of, an appropriate cost. Any questions about what we're doing here? The example you have to look at a little bit carefully. But what we're doing is at each iteration allowing you one new vertex as a possible intermediary. Okay? Any questions about that? Yes? Why was what? A to B, there's now a way of getting there at a cost of 10. That's interesting. Why is it that there's a way to get from A to B at a cost of 10? Well, there is because there's a way to get there with C as an intermediary. Does everybody kind of see it? This was no intermediaries. A is an intermediary. B is an A and B. This is A, none of them. Vertex A is an intermediary. Vertex A and B is an intermediary. Vertex A, B, and C is an intermediary. A, B, and D is an intermediary. So why is it that we could go through this? Well, there was a way to get from A to C. There was a way to get to, from C to A, from C to B. Therefore, there's a way to get from A to B through C. Okay, yes. This is only going to store the length of the path. But is that necessarily, first of all, if you want to actually store what was the way that we got through this, there's other data structures you could use to keep track of. Remember, we have to keep track of like the parent relation and stuff like that? My claim is there's a way to keep track of that. Okay?
That would be a 3D array, right? The easiest.
Let's right now worry about where the costs come from. That's kind of my major goal. Okay? Any questions? So what is the algorithm here? Okay? Let's go back. This is the recurrence relation. It says that the cost of getting from I to J going through vertex K is going to be through vertices 1 through K. That's what that really means, right? It's going to be the cheapest of the possibilities of getting from I to J going through vertices 1 through k minus 1, or the cost of going from I to k using intermediate vertices 1 to k minus 1, plus the cost of k to j using intermediate vertices 1 to k minus 1. Does everybody see either it's going to include going through K or not going through K? Any questions about that? That said, what is the actual code or implementation for this program? This is the entire code to compute the all-pair shortest path matrix. Let's look at that. If you understood the recurrence, you're going to believe this. Okay? What is the idea? We're going to have an outer loop that is going to govern what are the intermediate vertices we're allowed to use. That's what the K thing is. Now, for all vertices I and J, what is the cheapest way to go from I to J using vertices 1 through K as an intermediary? Either it was the cost of IJ going K minus 1, or it was the cost IJ, I to K, plus the cost of K to J. Any questions about that? Okay. How much space is this algorithm using? Okay, and if you once you understand how much space this algorithm is using, the magic will suddenly be, hopefully become clear. If we have an n-vertex graph, how much space is this algorithm using as it currently is? Yeah? N squared? No. How much space is this algorithm using as implemented here? Okay, yeah? N cubed space. Now, why is that? What are the three? How do you get an n cubed space? Does everybody agree if you had an array that went 1 to n, 1 to n, 1 to n, it would use n cubed space, right? What are the three parameters on this array? I, j, and the superscript. Does everybody see what it's doing? It's actually keeping track of n different arrays, if you wish, where that indexed by k, right? And it's telling you what is the shortest path from I to J using IJK is going to be the shortest path from I to J using vertices 1 through K as an intermediary. Okay? So this is really an N cubed space algorithm and an N cubed time algorithm. Okay? How many people see this so far? Okay? If you can see this, this is a wonderful thing, okay, because this is a dynamic programming kind of thing. Any questions about this that come to mind about this? Yeah?
How much does the CPU caching?
Okay, how much does the, does, what?
How much better is this because of CPU?
How much, first of all, CPU caching, this is not caching in the sense of magic things happening behind my, what you call it, my processor and registers and shifting and S2 and all these kind of things. Here I'm explicitly keeping track of a three-dimensional array to store results. So it's caching in the sense that I'm storing things. But it is storing things that I'm doing deliberately, right? I have declared a three-dimensional array, and I'm storing these things. Okay? Now, how much faster does it make it? Well, the fact that I can just look up what the cheapest way to go from I to K using vertices 1 to K minus 1, the fact that I can look this up in constant time instead of somehow computing it from scratch is what's driving the entire algorithm. Does everybody see that? The reason this is an N cubed algorithm is that it is N times N times N, with the innermost loop being look something up from a three-dimensional array, plus look something up from a three-dimensional array, plus look something up from a three-dimensional array, plus add two numbers together, plus tell which of two numbers is smaller, and copy it. Do you see that if I can look up these values, instead of making recursive calls to them or something like that, this whole inner thing is a constant time operation. That's what makes this thing work, okay, is the fact that I'm storing those values instead of recomputing them. Any questions about this? Yes?
So is there any significance to the way that K is represented as being a superscript?
Okay, the answer is anything that I'm doing to represent it as a superscript, maybe just to make it more confusing to you, instead of having it be a third array argument, or just to note that it's not, it's the distance, the way to read this is the shortest path from I to J using vertices 1 to K minus 1 as an intermediary. In recognizing it as an array, you could view these as three indices to an array, okay? And that might, when you're programming it, maybe that's an easier way to think about it. Any questions about it? Okay, actually, the reason why it's like a superscript, if you need to know, is it's sort of like I'm doing almost a matrix multiplication. I'm doing kind of a powery kind of thing, almost, right? At each time, I'm kind of taking my previous matrix and doing something to it, okay? So that's kind of maybe why I like this notation, okay? But conceptually, what is this thing doing? Think about it. It's a crummy four-line algorithm. It computes all pairs shortest path because of this formula. And it runs an n cubed time because if we first compute it for k equals 1, when we get to try to compute it for k equals 2, the values for k equals 1 have already been computed. Does everybody see that? When we need k equals 3, we're going to have the values for k 2 computed. Okay? Any questions about this? Okay? Think about it, try to understand it, and we will see this kind of thing when we deal with dynamic programming. Any questions? Okay, good luck. Again, if you want, sign up at my office for the pizza. I want to see new people this time. If you ate pizza with me before, I've had it with you, okay? But the rest of you, I'd like to see. Any questions? Thank you.